No baseball. We'll focus on hoops and some thoughts on the untenable situation involving the New Orleans Pelicans, the NBA, and Anthony Davis. All coming your way today, Tuesday, February 26th, 2019.
Bucks up 8 with the ball. Tony Snell driving down the lane. Brogdon right corner. 3. Bango! Brogdon! And the Bucks lead by 11. 93-82.
Fox off to Bogdanovich up top. Brewer moves to the right side of the floor. They get it to Corey against Andrew Wiggins. Crosses him over into the paint. Tough fall away. High arcing shot. No good. Cat clears the rebound. It's his 20th of the night. It's a 30-20 game for Karl Anthony Towns.
I mean, I was itching. I'll be honest, I was very bored. Not used to that. I'm always ready and available for my teammates. No matter how bad I feel, the mental challenges, physical challenges that go through, I'm just so blessed that I have a chance, you know, to continue to play basketball and see Spalding.
And welcome. Happy Tuesday. I got to be honest with you. I have no clue who that was. CD, who was that clip of?
Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh, had no idea. The big cat. Yes, indeed. Well, that's a great way to start things off on this Tuesday. How are you, boys and girls? Ladies and gentlemen, it is great to be with you. CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. On the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. If you look outside, you'll see, well, there's no baseball at the box tonight. The LSU, as you heard in CD's top of the hour sports update, the LSU South Alabama game is postponed, and they'll resume that come April the 3rd, which means all eyes will be focused on the Pete Maravich Assembly Center for tonight's ball game between the Texas A&M Aggies and the LSU Tigers. The Aggies trying to get a opening day bye in the SEC tournament, and they've got to make a deep run, if not win the tournament, to get into the NCAA tournament. So it's a very important game for them. And as Will Wade said, I don't need to tell my players what's going on. They know. They know what's at stake. They know that there's an SEC title out there for the taking. 4 games to go. And it starts with Texas A&M. Then you go on the road for 2. Alabama, Florida. And you wrap things up with a team that hadn't won a game in the league yet. The Vanderbilt Commodores. So 4 winnable games, but certainly some losable games as well. And LSU has shown that in the propensity of, at home, not playing their best. We'll get much more into this ballgame coming up. Don't know about Tremont Waters, whether he's a go or not. We will find out, and when we do, you will as well. But I was watching the New Orleans Pelicans taking on the Philadelphia 76ers, and the sham that the league is making this franchise go through for the remainder of this season. According to NBA spokesman Mike Bass, the NBA did not tell New Orleans that it would be fined $100,000 per game if Anthony Davis were held out for the remainder of the season. The Pelicans were advised that the team had not identified a proper basis for making that determination at this time, and league rules governing competitive integrity therefore require that he be permitted to play. So here we are. Anthony Davis kind of twisting, turning, as like he's in exile, and the Pelicans trying to manage this untenable situation as best they can. And each game becomes more awkward and more uncomfortable at home. And it shows that this charade is not working for anybody. It's not working for the Pelicans, who have the most valuable trade asset in club history and would like the right to play or sit him at their own discretion. It's certainly not behooving Davis, who, thanks to his agent's idiotic decision to go public with a trade request, he's being booed at each home game. And he's kind of like that old movie, Rebel Without a Cause. He's a man without a team. He's in exile. And not even the Pelican teammates, who, it's become quite obvious, play much, much better without Davis and his, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go play on a team where I can win. So put that all together. And it's hardly a coincidence that the Pelicans beat the Lakers on Saturday night without Anthony Davis. And a game that certainly the Los Angeles Lakers need and need desperately if they're going to figure out a way to get into the playoffs. And last night, without Davis, outscored the Sixers 41-27 down the stretch with him on the bench to almost win the darn thing. And certainly it does not help Pelicans fans who have loyally supported this team for years and now see another rebuild thanks to Davis's departure. So it's just a mess. It just is. I feel for Alvin Gentry. He's been asked to manage this nightly dumpster fire with a gun with no ammunition and with his smile and his charm. So what do you do? Well, for at least another 20 games in 6 weeks, you got to put up with it. I wish Adam Silver, who is widely regarded as one of the shrewdest leaders in professional sports, would come up with a solution. But if it was just the Pelicans, okay. But there's 29 other teams that are monitoring this situation closely. So is the NBA Players Association. It's a complicated mess. But maybe with some finesse, ingenuity, a little gumption, a little chutzpah, Silver could make this work. This is one of those, you got to go outside the box kind of things. An unusual circumstance. This isn't a team's resting some fly-by-night guy. This is one of the top players in all of basketball. This is a once-in-a-generation talent. He's gone from the face of the franchise to the disgrace of the franchise, and it happened overnight. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. It's ugly for everybody involved. When will common sense prevail? There's nothing right now common or sensical about the Davis situation in New Orleans. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. He should never play another game at home. They should play him on the road and play him incrementally. A little minute here, a little minute there, boom, done. If that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do, but then it's done. So that's my thoughts, excuse me, on this untenable situation with the New Orleans Pelicans. But we'll take a time out here, because when we come back, we're going to talk about something that's not untenable. We're going to talk LSU basketball. Yes, indeed. We're going to have John Thornton come up. He is the color analyst of the much-improved Texas A&M Aggies. Forget the fact LSU beat them by 15 in College Station earlier this year. These Aggies have won 4 of their last 5. We'll see why and what their plans are tonight. Next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All All right, tonight in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, the Texas A&M Aggies come to town to take on the 13th-ranked LSU Tigers. 8 o'clock tip, 7:30 pregame show here on 103.7 The Game. A&M has won 4 of its last 5 outings, including an 87-80 win at Arkansas on Saturday. Savion Flagg was named the SEC Player of the Week for the first time, capping off his performance as he has led the Aggies in scoring and rebounding in each of the 3 last games. He had a 22-point night at Arkansas. So you got a team coming in here that's already played LSU and got beat at their home court by 15, and they're winning 4 of their last 5 outings. They haven't played against the cream of the crop. I mean, they have not played against Kentucky, Tennessee, LSU, South Carolina, Ole Miss. But 4 out of 5 ain't bad. No question about that. Wendell Mitchell, another really good player, added 20 points in the win at Arkansas. That's his 8th 20-plus point game of the year. He came into his own in SEC play. He leads the Aggies with 15.4 points per game and 1.7 steals per game. So a cat-quick guard. And those two, Flagg and Mitchell, have combined to average 40.7 points over the last 3 games. LSU has Cavell Bigby-Williams. A&M has Josh Nebo, the SEC's leader in blocked shots. And he had quite a game against Arkansas. He 14 points and was really adept. TJ Starks will be a matchup nightmare. He's given the Aggies a spark off the bench. He had 11 points at Arkansas to reach double figures for the 4th time in the last 5 games. He is so quick with the basketball, hard to keep him in front of you. It just is. We'll have much more analysis on this game. John Brady will join us at the bottom of the hour. And then Andy Kennedy, who will have the call of the game on ESPN2 as a color analyst, the former Ole Miss head basketball coach, will join us and share his thoughts from an outside perspective looking in. Billy Kennedy, good friend, a Louisiana native, cut his teeth at Southeastern. He'll be on the sidelines yet again. And it's a very important game for them. This is the 40th meeting between these two teams. LSU's won 3 straight in the series and leads all time 21-18. The home team has dominated this. A&M is 10-4 at College Station. LSU 15-2 in Baton Rouge. So they haven't always been a part of the SEC, but we've certainly played against them for quite some time. So much more on this one coming up shortly. I was asked to give my opinion. You can always email me, askjordy@gmail.com. askjordy@gmail.com. Chris Jackson, a.k.a. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, was in Baton Rouge yesterday for an event, and he was asked by a reporter about his time at LSU and should they have his jersey number 35 retired. Chris Jackson was a phenomenal player. Make absolutely no mistake about it. He was, from the moment he set foot on that LSU campus, he was a scoring machine. He was doing things offensively that LSU hadn't seen before since Pistol Pete, but in a completely, completely different way. Pete was smooth and effortless, and at 6'5", just did whatever he wanted, and he was more of a show with his ball handling and passing skills and still averaged 44 points a game. Chris Jackson had a 3-point line, had the shot clock, and he was averaging 30 points a game. And he had some double nickels along the way against teams. And he was sensational. He had Tourette's syndrome, which basically helped him on the basketball court. It really did. A sensational talent who, like anyone else, we all go through things. We all experience things. We have our trials. We have our tribulations. But how do we end up in the long run? And Mahmoud Abdul-Arouf is at peace with himself. And he said, sure, I'd love to have my jersey retired. That would be the ultimate honor. But having my jersey retired and telling the good Lord that I average 30 points a game is not going to get me in to the kingdom of heaven. So when you put it in that perspective, he is so at peace and so calm and so reflective and has grown exponentially as a man. There was a time when he wouldn't come back to LSU. He would not come back. But slowly and surely, he is integrating and coming back into the fray. You know, Pistol Pete's jersey is retired. Bob Pettit's jersey is retired. Shaquille O'Neal's jersey is retired. Rudy Macklin's jersey is retired. All-Americans, Pete, Pettit, Shaq, Players of the Year. Chris Jackson deserves to have his number retired. Why not? He came up. Now, they didn't win any championships. Pete never won a championship. Shaq never won a championship. Rudy never won a championship. National championship. So that's not entered into the fray. But his numbers speak for themselves. And somebody says, well, don't you have to be a graduate? No, you don't. Pete wasn't. He wasn't a graduate. But he was a great player. So I don't think that should be a prerequisite of that. What you accomplished on the court, and remember, the kid played in front of a packed house every night. He did LSU a great service and a great favor. And I believe LSU should return the favor and retire his jersey. And while I'm at it, I still believe they should call it the Dale Brown Court. I really do. I know Skip Bertman won all those national championships. I know. But Dale Brown made that son of a gun relevant. He really did. And I will be brought across the coals by some people for that statement about the Dale Brown Court. But, man, he made LSU basketball relevant. He made them nationally known, nationally recognized, some Final Fours, SEC championships, won more games than any other coach in SEC history except for the Baron of Kentucky, Adolph Rupp. He's pretty good. So I personally would like to see the two of those. And when they do the statue of Pistol Pete, don't stick him in the back with Shaq and Mr. Pettit. Pistol Pete needs to be in front of the Assembly Center. Front row, center stage. And if they listen to me, I think this would be pretty cool. And I know it can be done. Shaq's dunking the ball. Bob Pettit's taking a jumper. They should have Pistol Pete. Now think about this. The show of all shows. The consummate pro. The ultimate circus act. The leading scorer in college basketball history that no one will break. Because no one's going to stick around. And he only did it in 3 years. Anyway, make a long story short. Pete, the statue, he should be standing in front of the Assembly Center with a ball spinning, literally spinning on his finger forever. There's got to be a way that they can do that somehow, some way. There's got to be some engineer who can work with the sculptor and come up with that where that ball is spinning forever on his finger. Because that's what you think about when you see Pistol Pete spinning the ball on his finger, the ultimate showman. Nobody used to spin the ball on their finger before he did. So that is my suggestion to those in power at LSU. One, retire Chris Jackson's jersey, number 35. He was terrific. He was a scoring machine. Number two, the Dale Brown Court. Pete Maravich Assembly Center on the Dale Brown Court. Simple. And number three, Pistol Pete forever. Immortalized. The statue with the ball spinning on his finger. I know it can be done. Heck, get the people at Disney World. They'll figure that son of a gun out. Right? They'll figure it out. They're so good at all that stuff, there's got to be a way. The bionic arm, whatever, there's got to be a way. That would be something. 337-706-0111 is the number. We are presented each and every day by the Louisiana Lottery, who gives so much back of their earnings to education in the state of Louisiana. For everybody to win, yourself included, you got to get in the game. The Louisiana Lottery. Play to win, but play. John Brady will join us this afternoon, as will Andy Kennedy, and we'll really start to break down this LSU-Texas A&M basketball game. How does LSU respond from the exhilarating, euphoric Saturday win against the Tennessee Volunteers? It's a quick turnaround to a Tuesday night game. John Brady will join us next, and we'll break it all down here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, your source for LSU sports. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. It's time to talk some more LSU basketball, taking on the Texas A&M Aggies tonight. John Brady, the color commentator on the LSU Sports Radio Network. You listen to the ball game right here on 103.7 The Game. Late night tip. We woke John up from a nap. I'm kidding. John, how are you, my friend?
Doing good, Jordy. How are you?
I am terrific. Take me back. You know, I watch games like the LSU-Tennessee game, and it still gets to me. It still brings out emotions in me. Did that do the same for you as a competitor, as a coach, as a guy that played the game? I mean, what a fun environment.
Well, you know, sellout crowd. The crowd was fantastic. You know, the LSU team against Tennessee showed a lot of character and toughness and resiliency. And you know, going into that game with Tremont Waters not playing and your second leading scorer, Naz Reid, getting 1 point, and then for LSU to win on top of that, you know, just goes to show you there's a lot of positives flowing through the LSU team. And I was so proud of two Louisiana guys, Baton Rouge in particular, Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays, you know, for the way they played the whole game.
I think Skylar Mays, just by his demeanor, his mannerisms, is overlooked. He's not the flashy guy. He's not the big talker. But, man, you just want him on your team. He's steady, even if he's not scoring, right? He's doing winning things for your team. And you've always been high on him.
I've liked him from day one. You know, he's a guy that's low maintenance and high performance. And anytime you can get a player that's low maintenance, high performance, you want those kind of guys around all the time because they take care of the little things that you need to take care of, you know, from players on the team, particularly in the locker room. You know, I never were good with locker room lawyers. You know, they always had a reason or an excuse or looking for something the coach didn't do right or did wrong. He's perfect for that team. And that's one of the reasons the team is so successful. He possesses all the intangibles that championship teams need, and he's certainly the definition of what intangibles are on a team that's really succeeding at a high level.
I think LSU has two of those players. I think they have one in the backcourt, and I think they have one in the frontcourt in Cavell Bigby-Williams. Here's another guy. Look, seems to be low maintenance, high performance, always seems to come up with the right play at the right time, doesn't need the ball to be happy, and that's rare. You and I needed the ball to be happy. He doesn't.
If he played with you, one of y'all would be upset half the time because you would never give him the ball back. And at least he doesn't need it, you know. But he's perfect. Will Wade said it on numerous occasions. You know, he fulfills his role. He plays within himself. I've noticed that from day one about him. You know, the three tip-ins that he's gotten this year has either forced overtime or won the game. So he's around the ball. He does what he's supposed to do. And he's another one, like we talked about. He's a low-maintenance, high-performance player within the role that he plays. And I think those kind of guys are invaluable.
What was the key to that comeback in the second half with Naz not scoring? But what was the key in your mind?
Key in my mind was we won the field goal stat the second half. We made them miss, and we didn't give them any exorbitant number of offensive rebounds, and we kept them off the free throw line, and we got to the free throw line. So I think the defensive play of LSU the second half by wrestling away the field goal stat, we won the field goal stat, and more times than not, when you can do that, particularly from the three and the two, most of the times you can win the game.
You think Tremont Waters is playing tonight?
I have no idea. I know Coach Wade said he was improving, getting better. But in terms of, I think it's going to be a game time decision, possibly. And if there's, you know, and this is one of those games, Jordy, that everybody expects LSU to win. A&M's got a losing record.
Wait a minute.
They're 5-9 in the league. Hello?
Yeah, I'm saying, wait a minute, slow.
Yeah.
It's not going
to
be easy, right?
So, you know, if Tremont Waters is close, maybe they hold him out to get him ready to go on the road against Alabama. So you can't take anything for granted, but I certainly wouldn't risk him not playing on the road. If I feel like if our team plays well, we could beat A&M without him. So I think that's going to be a judgment call, depending on how Tremont feels or cleared by the doctors or whatever the case may be. And then whatever Coach Wade feels, you know, deep down what they need to do in order to prepare for games coming up on the road.
No question. John Brady, kind enough to join us. LSU A&M, 8 o'clock tip tonight, right here on 103.7 The Game. What do you remember? I remember LSU A&M under the Will Wade era of, one, a Tremont Waters heave-ho with just last year to win it, and then this year I think he got 36 to win it. A&M always seems to play LSU pretty darn tough. Tell me about what A&M does well.
Well, I don't know if they do. I think they defend pretty good, and they rebounded pretty good because they struggle to score. And anytime teams with the mentality that we struggle to score and our field goal stat is not as good as it needs to be, you seem to have a motivation to really defend because, you know, if you can't score and you can't defend, that's really a recipe for losing. So I think they defend pretty well and they rebound pretty well. And they're going to have to make some baskets tonight. Their field goal stat is going to have to move up for them to beat us on the road tonight.
John Brady, kind enough to join us. You've been to NCAA tournaments before. You know what it's like to get to where you need to get to, what it's like in that tournament. When you look at this LSU basketball team, now certainly, look, we can do this. I know players and coaches can't, but we can look ahead a little bit. Does this team have the necessary ingredients, in your opinion, for a nice long run in this thing?
Well, I do. Now, you know, I think after the first game, and particularly the second game, you know, to go any deeper than that, sometimes matchups play a role. Late game shots or the making of free throws play a role. So it gets down to some things that maybe the coach can't control, that players have to do. But I think this team has the weapons and the flexibility offensively to score from different players at different moments. It seems every player on this team almost has made a critical play to help win a game,
true,
whether it's Tremont or Emmett Williams or Bigby Williams or Skylar Mays, Naz Reid. They've all had moments. Marlon Taylor even has had moments where they've made plays to win close games. And I think in the NCAA tournament, that's a valuable weapon to have. They can't concentrate like, well, we're going to take this guy out and they can't score. But LSU's been able to find a way to win like that. And I think also if we defend like we did the second half against Tennessee for most of the game, anytime you score pretty freely and you defend it well, you've got a chance to separate a score and beat some really good teams.
I mean, Javonte Smart's got to have some confidence now, and not that he never lacked it, but my goodness gracious, he was, you talk about seizing the moment, right? He was spectacular.
Wow. You know, incredible game for a freshman. You know, they couldn't stay in front of him, and he's been that way all year. He's had some inconsistent games shooting the ball, but certainly from an athletic standpoint, the thing that impresses me about Javonte Smart is the competitive nature by which drives him. I saw that in the preseason practices this year when Coach Wade would put him against Tremont Waters in practice. He took that as a personal challenge. He wanted to do well. He guarded Tremont every day in the practice just like a competitive guy should. He didn't back down. And I think you see that in his play. He can have a bad game, or not shoot the ball well and still play well, but it doesn't linger with him. He comes right back, and he doesn't have any conscience about it, and he keeps playing, he keeps improving, which allows him to keep moving forward.
John Brady, the color analyst on the SEC, on the LSU Sports Radio Network for tonight's SEC matchup. When you look at this thing, give me LSU's keys. Because, look, it's easy for us to say, man, what a great win Saturday. And it's the coach's. I've always thought it's the player's job to get up and get ready to play. A coach can only do so much. A coach can give a scouting report, a game plan. It's within that locker room. Those players have to avoid the letdown. So that's up to the leadership on this team to do that. But with that considered, what does LSU have to do tonight to, on a quick turnaround from a Saturday to a Tuesday night, to come out and stay alive in this SEC title chase?
Well, I think the quick turnaround's a good thing. You know, they don't have an extra day to hang around and let everybody tell them how good they are and keep patting themselves on the back for the game against Tennessee. And I think Coach Wade and the staff have done a good job of not letting the team get down. Even though we lost a game or two at home that we had opportunities to win, I don't think it's because we weren't ready to play. I think this team tonight will be ready to go. I think Coach Wade and them are challenging these guys. They understand the time at hand. They've got to live in the moment, the present. You can't think about what you just did, or you can't anticipate what's lying ahead. You've got to keep your team playing in the moment and playing right now, and think about what they need to do and not what they have done or what they may do. And I think the coaching staff's done a good job with this, and I think our players have learned along the way, and I think they'll be ready to go tonight. Unless something crazy happens, we shoot it poorly, and A&M makes baskets they don't normally make, I think we'll be fine here at home tonight against A&M.
Got to watch for Savion Flagg. He's the SEC Player of the Week, had 22 at Arkansas. You remember him. What is his game like?
Well, you know, The guard is I think he's streaky. I think he can go on a tear and make baskets, but I think also at the same time he can lose the game for A&M. I think he's hit or miss. So we'll see how he plays tonight. But I'm not as concerned about what A&M has or what they does.
Gotcha.
As opposed to how LSU comes out and approaches this game from a mental standpoint.
I like that. You remember a game that I remember? We talked about it before. That Arizona game that you were a part of, that crowd was pretty crazy, too. I mean, similar, right, to the Tennessee game? That was crazy.
Oh, it's wonderful. It reminded me of a couple of Arizona games when we beat them when they were number one in the country, then we beat them again when they were came in here at number four in the country. So, you know, and what's good is LSU fans respond to quality play and good teams. You've been there when it's nuts. Coach Brown had several good years of crazy crowds because he had really good teams. We had some years of that. So I think the LSU fan base was spectacular the other day against Tennessee. And, you know, and Coach Wade has made the statement about this team being consistent in how it prepares itself. We've been good against the highly ranked teams and the teams that maybe people thought we weren't supposed to beat, but against a couple of teams at home, we've let it slip away. So I think that's the challenge today is against an A&M team, you know, that everybody expects us to beat tonight. Can we answer the bell and be ready to go?
I know one thing. John Brady and Chris Blair will answer the bell. They'll be ready to go as always, and we look forward to the call of the game, big guy. And have a great one. Have fun, and we'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks so much, as always. Highlight of the week when we get to talk to you, buddy. Thank you.
Anytime, Jordy. Thanks, man.
See you. All right, buddy. You take care. John Brady, kind enough to join us, and he's absolutely right. He is absolutely right. This is one of those games where, you know, you're not worried about Grant Williams. You're not worried about Admiral Schofield because they're really, really good players. And that's not a slight on the Texas A&M Aggies, but you're better than A&M. So it's about what you do and how you do it. Do you bring the energy? Do you bring the effort? Do you need the crowd to get into it before you get into it? And I hope that that is not the case because that's the recipe for a tough, tough night. And again, here you go. A team that you're better than, you get off to a really good start, you got a chance to put them away early. The longer you let them hang around, the better they start to feel about themselves, that's when you start to get into trouble. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. LSU wins this game. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two. This is the Jordy Helfer Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. We're 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We're proud to be here every day, and we'll continue to work hard to make it even better every day. Stay with us.
Only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, 52 minutes after the hour. Welcome back. Always, you can email me, askjordy@gmail.com. askjordy@gmail.com. In case you have a question, a comment, a response to anything we do, and we welcome those. The NFL apparently is lacking support for changes to the NFL replay. That, according to the owner of the New York Giants, John Mara. Who's been a longtime member of the NFL competition committee, he said he's not sensing a lot of support for making changes. He said calls are just missed. Officials are just human. They're going to miss calls from time to time. But do they miss a call as egregious as the one against the New Orleans Saints that cost the Saints from going to a Super Bowl? My goodness gracious. Mara said adding an ability to challenge no calls, for example, raises questions about what replay officials would review. Are you going to look for one area or check the entire offensive line? I think you get into a lot of areas with a lot of unintended consequences, and I just don't think there's a lot of sentiment for going in that direction at this point. So when Nickel Robey Coleman just made a direct impact in the Saints' 26-23 overtime win over the Saints. I mean, that certainly created energy to discuss the system, right? But Jerry Jones, like Mara, noted mistakes are part of the fabric of the game. So notably, no one involved in the decision, not Commissioner Roger Goodell, nor any member of the competition committee, have expressed public support for expanding replay or adding an official. Jerry Jones said, over the course of time, everybody gets affected by a call, by a player making a mistake, by a coach making a bad decision. Those things happen. And he's right about that. But given the significance of the play and the focus on that error late in the game, I mean, you have to have a discussion again. That's the right thing to do. And you have to come up with some ideas to modify replay, add to, subtract from, whatever it may be. It's got to be a healthy discussion there. It's got to be. So we'll see. We will see. In other news, they did confirm that the committee has discussed a handful of on-field celebration that include players or other teams, officials who were on the bench. They said they will remind teams that only players on the field can participate in those celebrations, but that reminder will not impact the celebrations themselves. I don't know about that. I just want them to have a healthy discussion about what can you do on plays that directly affect the outcome of a game. You got to get it right. It's only fair. It's only right. It just is. Okay, enough of that. Because I'm just preaching to the choir on that one. A couple of newsworthy items here for your thoughts. A Tom Brady rookie card sold for over $400,000 at auction. $400,000 for a Tom Brady rookie card. How about that? And I don't know what's going on, but the Skyhook, the most unstoppable shot in the history of basketball. And the architect, Hall of Fame center Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he has put four of his NBA championship rings up for auction, according to Golden Auctions, with much of the proceeds going to his Skyhook Foundation charity to help benefit kids to learn about science, technology, engineering, and math. I don't know what the rings from 1980, 85, 87, and 88 are going to garner, but if it goes to that, then I am all for it. Way to go, Lou Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Nice, nice. Hour number one's history. Come on back. Hour number two, straight ahead. Starting off with hot topics next on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Well, hour number two of two, and away we go on a Tuesday, the 26th day of February. Man, I miss that sunshine already, don't you? Goodness gracious. It's just, I need some vitamin C. I need that sun to come hit me, or vitamin B or D, whatever the heck it is. I just need the sun. I just do. But anyway, school zones are in effect, so please, 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 please be careful as you're out and about on the highways and the byways. To repeat yet again, no LSU baseball tonight. April 3rd will be the day that they make up the matchup with South Alabama. LSU will take on the Southern Jags tomorrow at the box. And Eric Walker will start for the first time since the College World Series in 2017. If the game gets played, time she will tell. That's just how it goes in baseball. But tonight, it's LSU basketball at Peach Palace against the Texas A&M Aggies. You can listen to that ball game right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show, 7:30. Call the game at 8 o'clock. LSU a favorite in the ball game, but, man, we've learned, haven't we? We've learned that you can't take anything for granted. And how LSU responds after that emotionally draining win over Tennessee will be important. We talked with John Brady earlier, and no one's saying anything about Tremont Waters yet. Time will tell whether he plays tonight or not. Now, I know the kid wants to play. That's up to the team, the doctors, the coaches to figure out what's in the best interest of the kid, and we'll see. But LSU proved that they can win without him in the short term. Long term, no. They got to have Tremont Waters out there. And somebody said something about it. There's a rift between the coach and the player. That's the biggest bunch of nonsense of all time. Of all time. That's just purely, what do they call it now? Fake news? That is ultimate fake news. There's nothing wrong between the coach and the player. Trust me on that. All right. Without further ado, let's get busy. We do it every day at this time of day. It's my favorite segment of the day, where we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, so a lot going on. The NFL Combine coming up. Will it be Greedy Williams as the first Tiger, or will it be Devin White? We'll talk about that later at all. But CD, the floor is yours. What's hot?
Oh, there's a whole lot going on right now, Jordy. And, of course, the biggest story in the area is rain. Rain, it will not go away, Jordy. Getting a couple games canceled for both LSU and the Raging Cajuns. Their game against La Tech was pushed back to the same date, same time. That being said, Jordy, it's making me think, is it time to consider putting a retractable roof inside the box?
Oh, I knew you were going to come up with that one. Everything depends upon feasibility and money. How much would it cost to do that? And I have no concept, no idea. They're not going to do that anytime soon unless somebody out there who loves baseball more than anything and has got more money to spend than he can or she can spend ever in their lifetime and wants to make a donation to do that, that's the only way that's going to happen, in my opinion, my humble opinion, at this point in time. No, they'll just postpone games and they'll move it back and they'll just do without before that happens.
Or you just wait till Alex Bregman's contract, it gets an extension, then he gets paid the big bucks and probably throw in Aaron Nola as well. You get all these former LSU players pitching together.
Okay, well, you ask him. I'm not.
That being said, Jordan, we gotta move over to the NFL. You talked about it at the end of the hour. My goodness, it feels like the NFL just cannot get it right. And they're going to look into not fixing that replay system going forward. I mean, all you really have to do, at least for me, is give me the transparency like we're seeing with the AAF, where they actually have a camera zoned in on the person who's going to be reviewing it. That way they can give you the explanation of how they're walking through each and every play. At least give that to me, and then we can go from there. At least try to adopt some stuff from the AAF, at least in that aspect.
Yeah, something. You've got to give someone the right on an egregious play that affects the outcome of a game to get it right. Somehow, some way, whether it's a coach that gets a mulligan on a challenge or something. It's got to be something done. I mean, common sense has to come into play. And I just wonder and wonder and wonder if that had been the Super Bowl and that play happened. It was the Saints versus the Rams, and it was in the Super Bowl, and that yep. decided the outcome. My goodness gracious. Now yeah. what do you do? So these guys are very smart. They wouldn't be billionaires if they weren't. You don't get lucky being a billionaire.
Yeah, you got
to be smart. You got to figure out a way to get this right somehow, some way. And I'm not that person, but common sense tells you it's not that difficult. It really isn't.
No, it shouldn't be that difficult. All you have to do is kind of like I said, look at what the AAF's doing, at least from that aspect. And also, at least have a moment in time, kind of like how we have in the NBA. You have the final 2 minutes of isn't it each half or at the end of the final 2 minutes of the yeah. ball game, to where like referees at any given time can kind of stop everything and review it. Make it the final 5 minutes.
Look, you just don't want it to be like the LSU-Tennessee basketball game where the yep. officials went to the scores table time after time after time. If you got to go to the scores table that often, then you shouldn't be reffing SEC basketball games. You should go back to biddy basketball and get some confidence in yourself that you can make the right call. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a whole ridiculous situation right now, Jordy. Moving over to the NBA, Jordy, because I saw this last night. James Harden, his impressive streak came to an end last night with only, I think it was 32 straight games with 30 points or more, well short of that record that Wilt still holds to this day, 62 straight games Never. With 30 points or more. Yeah. And it got me thinking, Jordy, what's the more impressive streak? Both these streaks that I'm going to bring up, I feel like they're pretty unattainable, but they definitely are both right, impressive in my mind. Wilt the Stilts, 62 straight games with 30 points or more, or Joe DiMaggio's hit streak?
I always thought it was a lot harder to hit a baseball, a round ball with a round bat. So I'm going to go with that one. Although no one's, you know, Pete Rose got pretty close. I think he had 44 straight games with a hit. But nobody's going to come close to Wilt. Nobody's going to. Michael Jordan never came close to Wilt. Are you kidding me? Kobe Bryant never came close to Wilt. Kevin Durant hadn't come close to Wilt. And those are prolific scores. So I'm going to say, even though it's harder to hit a baseball, I'm going to say the more impressive is Wilt and the 60-something, 30-plus or more points per game in a row. That's hard to do.
Oh, I mean, I can about imagine that's probably one of the hardest things you can do as a player in the NBA is to put up 30 points with the amount of consistency we saw Wilt Chamberlain do it with. I mean, then again, it's pretty hard to put up 100 points in a game. So Wilt Chamberlain, definitely probably one of the greatest players in the history of the game.
Yeah. Oh, no question. No question. You're right.
All right, Jordy, moving over to some Major League Baseball. This is some big news for the Colorado Rockies. Is Nolan Arenado, he is about to get paid a crazy amount of money, $260 million. It's crazy to think that he's worth $260 million with a franchise that hasn't necessarily seen a whole lot of success. But the last 2 years, he's done a lot of good things, Jordy. So is he worth that $260 mil?
Nobody's worth that. But you know what? If the market allows it, then good for the player. God bless him. Go on and just earn your – just go ahead and get it. Why not? But no player's worth that. And it just kind of sets the market. What is Bryce Harper going to get? And why, if the Philadelphia Phillies have made the offer to him, why do they continue to just let this thing drift out there? I would tell Bryce Harper and his representation, you got till today at 4 o'clock, and if you don't decide, we're pulling the offer off the table. We're pulling it off the table. So does he dare not take the 10-year, 300 whatever million it is, and go for a short-term, smaller deal with the Dodgers? I can't fathom him doing that when he's in his prime and this is the best opportunity for him to get the most bang for his buck ever. And I just don't understand what's holding this all along, other than the fact that it just seems to me that Bryce Harper doesn't want to play in Philly. He'd rather be on the left coast and playing with the Dodgers.
I think the Dodgers
they can't afford him for a long-term deal.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the biggest things that I've been frustrated with as a fan of Major League Baseball. I feel like this is going to become a bigger and bigger issue, is seeing some of the teams not being able to sign long-term deals with these guys because, one, they want too much money, and two, in the case of Bryce Harper, he's waiting too long. There should be a cutoff date to where, oh, hey, you're signing with this team.
It's gotta be.
Like, put it a week before when you have pitchers and catchers reporting, and I think you can kind of solve at least some of the problems.
I think they should do it before the end of the calendar year. So, in other words, free agents now got to get it done by December 31st of 2018.
Yeah.
Point blank, done. But, I mean, who knows?
Yep.
Who knows how long this is going to take? We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, he could very well be sitting out an entire year, Jordy. That would be a complete mess, him passing up getting paid to try and to play baseball, something he enjoys doing, just so he can get just a little bit more money in a longer-term deal.
Would that shock the world? Holy
cow. I think it would.
And look at the numbers. Yeah, Machado's getting $30 million of an annual salary. Miguel Cabrera gets $31 million annually. Arizona starter Zach Greinke gets $34.4 million a year. Arenado's going to get $32.5 million. So you know Bryce Harper is saying, okay, I'm worth more than all of them, so you got to give me more than $34.4 million a year. That's what they're doing. They're looking at the numbers, and it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's absurd, Jordy.
Crazy. But anyway, hey, good for them. Good for them.
Last one here, Jordy. Looking at back at the NFL, because this news has come out in the last like 5 minutes or so, and that's about Randy Gregory of the Cowboys. He is suspended indefinitely for once again violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. My goodness, Jordy, just cannot stay out of trouble. That could wind up hurting the Cowboys and their defensive line that seemed like it was pretty good last year.
Very good. Again, he missed 30. Prior to last season, he missed 30 of 32 regular season games, including the entire 2017 season, for multiple violations of the league's substance abuse policy. He was reinstated by the league in July after meeting with Roger Goodell. So he had 25 tackles, 6 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery in 14 games played for the Cowboys last season, and he played in both playoff games. How can you count on this guy? How can you count on him? You just can't. So Jerry Jones loves him. Some players with issues. He took a chance on Gregory, thinking that the support system that he had in place would help. Obviously, it didn't. Has he played himself out of the league? Just might have. We shall see. All right, there's your Hot Topics of the Day. Thank you, Clint. Brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, and that is Cajun Chef. The Biard family, for nearly 90 years, 9 decades, have been putting out the best product day in and day out because they only use the finest of spices, the finest of jalapeno peppers, their secret remedy, and you put it all together, and there you have it. Cajun Chef hot sauce. Do like we do. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. 337-706-0111. The ARCO hotline. 337-706-0111. Give us a holler if you have anything on your mind. We'd love to hear from you. You can always email me, askjordy@gmail.com. From the 237 Roof Studios. KLWB, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Welcome back to Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game. Here's your daily NFL food news. The Saints announced they are switching catering companies at the team facility. Well, how about that? I was kind of hoping they'd change the catering company inside the dome. I'm tired of all the salt and the fat and the carbs, right? Let's get some good stuff in the dome. Across the street, we have a caller. Frank, who wants to talk about the Pelicans on the Arco Hotline. Frank, good afternoon. Thanks for the call. How are you?
I'm good, Jordy. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you. What's up?
Well, RP3 asked a phenomenal question, and I tried to call in and give my take on it, but the newlywed didn't feel like answering the phone. And I know you're a hoop head, so I'm going to ask you, and I've been thinking about it all day, and I don't really know how to word the question, but it is simply this. RP3 said, is everybody ready for this season for the Pelicans to just be over? I, for one, am, because I'm tired of hearing, you know, how the Pelicans just come up short each and every game. I mean, they're not getting blown off the court. They're losing by a handful of points. But my question to you is this. Mm-hmm. Do you think the expectations on the Pelicans were put there maybe too high because of the Saints? Or is it Gail Benson's fault for maybe not paying enough attention? Or is it the players' fault for not buying into the system? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, Frank. Thank you very much. Man, that's a good question. I think in any situation like that, first of all, yes, I'm ready for the Pelican season to be over and done with. It is a farce. It's a sham. It is it's ridiculous what they're putting the fans through, the players through, the coaching staff through, the league through with this Anthony Davis debacle. And as far as I'm concerned, they should pull the representation away from LeBron's company and not let them be agents anymore. That's just handled totally, totally wrong. I think the Pelicans' expectations were riding on what they did a year ago and how they won that first playoff matchup against Portland and then, you know, succumbed to the Warriors after that. However, you add some new pieces to the puzzle. You've got Jrue Holiday. You've got a healthy Anthony Davis. And then all of a sudden, the injury bug hits and hits again and again and again. So I think it's a combination of a whole bunch of stuff. I really do. I don't think you can pinpoint it on any one thing specifically, but it's a combination of a bunch of things that culminated in this sham of a season. And as soon as Anthony Davis announced, or his agent announced, that he no longer wanted to be a Pelican and wanted to go pursue championships elsewhere, well, that's it. That was all she wrote, plain and simple. And now that obviously affected how the Lakers were playing, because all those young players were saying, well, golly, they don't want us. We want to with trade bait. Well, what's the deal with that? So it has a ripple effect all over the place. But it's got to go on and move on. But to answer your question again, not to be long-winded, I think it's a combination of a whole bunch of stuff. I really do. I don't think Dell Demps put the right pieces to the puzzle together. I don't think the players bought in. And I think injuries played a huge role in this, but the expectations came from winning a playoff series a year ago. Plain and simple. So, 337-706-0111. We'll have more on the LSU basketball game tonight. Andy Kennedy of ESPN2 will join us and will share his thoughts on this. And I think LSU basketball has what it takes to make a deep run in the tournament. I think they've got size, and I know they have a tremendous backcourt. And for you to be successful in the tournament, you got to have really good guard play. They shoot free throws at a very, very high level, which means you like the ball in their hands as the game is winding down. Teams have to foul. You got to knock down shots, and they are very efficient and proficient at that. They come off with energy off the bench. And if they can just teach Naz Reid and Cavell Bigby-Williams to be selective when they foul and not get into early foul trouble, they got a chance to do very, very well. But what makes the NCAA tournament unique and unlike any other event in the world is your one bad shooting day from calling your season over. Just one. It's all it takes is one. And that's why it's March Madness. And that's why you see upsets. It happens. But if LSU plays well, if you can beat Kentucky on the road in Tennessee, you can play and beat anybody. You can. But if LSU falls behind, like they have a propensity to do, Texas A&M can beat them tonight. So how do they handle the success, the pats on the back, the that-a-boys, and all that after the Tennessee game and the wild euphoric celebration that followed it, and deservedly so? Now they come back down to earth, and are they ready to go again? No, we'll see. We will see. Yes, indeed. That brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Right there at Ambassador Caffrey Parkway in the heart of the great city of Lafayette. More on this LSU basketball matchup tonight. Andy Kennedy will join us here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
Play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back. Big ball game. They're all big. Four games to go in the regular season of the SEC. And an SEC championship just within an arm's reach, if you can take care of your business, and it all gets underway with Texas A&M tonight. On the call on ESPN2, the former Ole Miss Rebel head coach and now doing a great job as a color analyst on the SEC Network and other properties, Coach Andy Kennedy joining us. Andy, welcome to Baton Rouge, my friend. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm great. How are you?
I am terrific. Golly, you've done enough analysis of these two teams. I've got to get your perspective on this LSU basketball team that hosted Tennessee on Saturday without Tremont Waters, with Naz Reid only scoring 1 point, and they figure out a way to pull the darn thing out. Your thoughts on LSU?
Well, I'm really impressed with them, Jordy. I've done a handful of their games this season, and I just think that they're such a unique team. They may be the only team. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're the best team in college basketball. That would be a losing argument. But I am going to tell you that they're the only team in college basketball that when they line up tonight, there's eight different guys on their team that could be the leading scorer. That speaks to the quality of the depth that this LSU team has. In preparing for tonight's game, you know, as the quote-unquote expert analysis, they want your opinion on storylines, what have you.
Right.
And I have told our people that the reality is that this LSU team is built to make a long run in the month of March. Now, what makes the NCAA tournament so great is the fact that if you play bad in one game, you're going home. Mm-hmm. So they could play bad in one day and go home. But the reality is they are built for long-term success. Great guard play, dynamic playmakers. They're very good on the glass, both especially their offensive glass. They make layups, meaning points in the paint. They make free throws at a really high rate, and they have quality depth. Now, are they as experienced as you would like? Probably not. But in this day and age of college basketball, they're probably as experienced as most teams that they'll be facing.
And with the NCAA tournament looming ahead, you don't want to look too far ahead, but there's a lot of rest between opportunities to play there. You talked about dynamic backcourt, and I think everybody centers their attention on Tremont Waters, and deservedly so. I don't think Skylar Mays gets enough credit. You know talent. You understand chemistry, glue, and all that stuff, all the cliches we use. But Skylar Mays, what is he? I think he means everything to this team.
I'll tell you this, and he was terrific Saturday. Stepped up in a big, big way. This is just my opinion. I'm not speaking for Will Wade or that staff or anybody on the inside. But if you ask me, just from viewing it from 30,000 feet, I think Skylar Mays is the most important player on the team. And I think the second most important player on the team is Cavell Bigby-Williams. Two guys that you take for granted because why? Because they do their job. That's why. Cavell Bigby Williams has been so underrated, because when you start naming off the dynamic players on that team, you very rarely get to him. But every game you look up, he's got a double-double. He's blocking key shots. He's chasing down balls. You don't have to run anything for him. He is an underrated passer out of the post. I think he's terrific. And Skylar Mays, going into league play, he was their MVP. He was on his way to having a first-team All-SEC season. He didn't shoot it very well early in league play from an efficiency standpoint, so he kind of started blending in more. I think after Saturday, I think he is really locked and loaded to have a really strong finish, which is a great sign for LSU.
He is Andy Kennedy. He'll be on the call of the game as the color analyst on the ESPN2 broadcast, 8 o'clock tip of the ball game. You can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game if you can't get to a television set. LSU handled A&M earlier up there in College Station, 72-57. Tremont Waters had one of those games, 35, 36 points. A&M's won 4 of their last 5. What have you seen them do differently to do that? Maybe not against the cream of the crop in the league, but still, 4 out of 5 ain't bad.
No, they're playing their best basketball of the year. And they've got some bodies inside. You know, they've had their own set of problems with injuries, starting the season with Admon Gilder, a preseason first-team All-League player, not playing all season because of an injury. That changed the dynamic of their team completely. But now they've got Josh Nebo and Christian Mekawulu up front, two strong, big bodies that I think can match up favorably with the LSU front line. They don't have the depth that LSU has. But those two guys, if they can stay out of foul trouble, can present problems because of their size and strength at the basket. And then I think tonight, and I don't know Tremont's status. My assumption is that he's going to play, but I don't know that. I think if he does play, then you're going to see, and this year, I was a part of it as 12 years as a head coach at Ole Miss, as you said, and we've always had good players in the league and always had good guards. But I don't know if there's ever been this quality of depth at the point guard position in the 13 years now that I've been involved directly with the league. And the two guys that are probably the most difficult to stay in front of in the league will be going head-to-head tonight, one being Tremont Waters and two being T.J. Starks. T.J. Starks is very, very difficult to stay in front of, and now that he and Wendell Mitchell are really playing copacetically offensively, it's a challenging matchup.
As a coach, how did you handle? I mean, you had some big wins during your tenure there, and it's always how do you handle the next game? When you looked at LSU and their shoot around, and when you talked to Will Wade, how do you think they're handling this thing? Because it was they were pretty fired up after that Tennessee game.
Huge win for them, most especially after the disappointment of dropping one to Florida in the midweek game. But I think this team, you know, they've kind of been there, done that. Again, with Tremont, he's a pretty cool customer. Skylar Mays is a pretty cool customer. Naz Reid, you know, certainly wouldn't think he is a freshman. He's not a really emotional guy. Neither is Bigby Williams. You know, Javonte Smart's always played with that edge. I would have to think he's gonna come into this game playing with so much confidence. I said it all throughout the day on the SEC Network in studio where I am every Saturday, but I thought Javonte Smart was the player of the day in college basketball on that Saturday. What an incredible performance that kid put on. Emmett Williams goes about his business in a very workmanlike fashion, as does Darius Day. So I don't think they've really got to worry about the emotional state of this team. They're 12-2 with 4 to play, with a real chance to capture an SEC championship. I think Will Wade will have them ready.
People are going to ask your opinion, so I'm going to ask it, and I'm not supposing anything, but with the news coming out that Coach Wade is going to be subpoenaed in the basketball corruption case, he says he hasn't been following it, he's just concentrating on his team, and I'm not pointing asparaging fingers at anyone. People can say what they want. They say that they have, you've heard Will Wade on a tape talking about a prospect to a runner type of a person. Distractions are a part of everyday life, and how you handle them are everything. I just wonder if this even turns up to be a distraction here and now to this basketball team.
I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of that locker room at all. I don't know, you know, the kids as well as anybody directly involved. But from my experience, Jordy, I don't think it's going to affect those players one ounce. I think they're caught up in the opportunities that they have put themselves in to win an SEC championship. I'm sure they'll be excited about going to Nashville and the excitement that comes with tournament play. And then, you know, they're looking forward to having an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. Now, Will Wade, obviously it's going to create a little more workload for he and whoever have to deal with the legal side of what is going on. I don't really know all the ins and outs either. Me neither. I just know what I have read. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're linked to something such as this, you know, there was a lot of talk when the federal stuff came out years, I don't even know how long back it's been, but it was a big deal when it came out that day, when there were actual arrests being made and college basketball was directly linked. And then, you know, it kind of goes, you know, undercover, so to speak, and you don't hear a bunch that's happening. Trickles here, trickles there. So this is the latest trickle, and we'll see where it all evolves.
Yeah, I'm with you. Andy Kennedy, nice job on the SEC Network. You said, and I distinctly remember when you did the LSU-Florida game, you said Florida had hit about 13 threes to get a win, and dadgummit if they didn't. What does LSU have to watch out for tonight so that they don't lose another one on their home court?
Well, they can't give Texas A&M anything easy. A&M, I think, will struggle to score through them at the basket in the half court. So what LSU can't do, and they've done a much better job as we've gotten deeper into the season, they can't have 15, 16, 17 turnovers, which is going to lead A&M to open floor opportunities. LSU and A&M, if you look at the numbers, Jordy, they're almost identical. They are identical. Both teams have taken 299 threes through 14 games, and I think one's made 95 and one's made 96. So they're not the volume shooting three-point team that you see out of a Florida or an Auburn or someone such as that. So I don't think that is going to be overly problematic. I think turnovers are the key. If LSU can keep their turnovers down, then I think they'll be in the driver's seat tonight.
Andy Kennedy, you can listen to him this evening, LSU, Texas A&M. Tennessee, Kentucky, LSU, those are the front runners. Which team do you like the most? If you could coach, and I'm not, you can be as honest as you want. Which team do you like the most if you're going into an NCAA tournament you think has the best team to give you a chance to go a long, long way?
Well, I'm not running for political office, but I am going to give you a politically correct answer. I would take any one of the three. I think they're all dynamic in their own way. I really believe this. I think all three are built and have the opportunity to be in Minneapolis. I really do. And I think LSU has earned the right to be in that group. I think Kentucky's been off the charts good defensively. P.J. Washington, if the league ended today, he would get my vote for player of the year. He's been off the charts good. They need to get Reed Travis back healthy and whole because they can't sustain a long run without him. I love Tennessee. Now, they have the hardest remaining schedule. They got to go to Ole Miss tomorrow. They then come home, I believe, and play Kentucky. Then they've got another hard road. They got the four hardest games. But they are certainly built for long-term success. I didn't think they played well enough to beat LSU on Saturday, and hence they didn't. And again, this LSU team is in the driver's seat because they have already taken care of Big Blue and Vol Nation head-to-head. So they'll win any tiebreaker for the one seed regardless of what happens moving forward if LSU can handle its business.
Andy, thanks for the time, buddy. I know it's a busy day. Have a great call of the game, and that PMAC is rocking, my friend. You're going to have a good time. Enjoy.
Hey, thank you. Always my pleasure.
You're the best. That's Andy Kennedy on the call of tonight's game, television side on ESPN2. Of course, we will have the game right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show, 7:30. 8 o'clock tip, as we've been telling you all day long. Only two more chances tonight and at the end of the regular season against Vanderbilt to see this team in person, up close and personal. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Hey, we welcome you back. The Jordy Hultberg Show, Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, brought to you in part by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie is one of those huge sports fans, and he's got everything you need. So if you're coming to the LSU basketball game tonight from Acadiana, stop off there. All the snacks and beverages you can ever imagine. You need a hot meal? They got that true soul food deli just waiting for you and ready to serve up whatever it is that you like. Oh, man, they've got everything, including the best cheeseburger you'll ever, ever taste. And don't forget D.C.'s Lucky Capital just behind it in case you want to make an investment. But please do so wisely. I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. That is D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. All right, we've covered the LSU basketball game versus Texas A&M from top to bottom. Again, 7:30 pregame show, 8 o'clock tip right here on 103.7 The Game. I don't know about Trey Waters yet. We still haven't heard. That'll be a game-time decision. Will Wade knows, but he's not saying anything to us right here, right now. So we'll see. But LSU has proven that without him, they can still win. But A&M's playing good basketball, and they will have LSU will have to max the intensity, and we'll see what kind of crowd shows up for this one to get them going. Student body will be there, but how many others? Because 8 o'clock tip, a lot of kids, that's late. School the next day, well, we shall see about that one. But only not many more chances to see them in person. This one and then the end of the regular season when Vanderbilt comes to town. Again, LSU baseball versus South Alabama postponed till April the 3rd. April the 3rd, LSU will host the Southern University Jaguars from Baton Rouge tomorrow night, of course, weather permitting, before they head out Thursday for a pivotal three-game set against the Texas Longhorns. So stay tuned. Keep it right here on your source for all LSU sports, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Great to see a former LSU Tiger committing to play one more season of NFL football, and that is Andrew Whitworth of the L.A. Rams going back. He'll be back for his 14th NFL season, 14 years. Of course, part of that dynamic LSU national championship team that Nick Saban led the way. Yes, indeed. So congratulations to Andrew Whitworth. It didn't make a lot of Saints fans happy when he made that comment after the no call in that just blunder of a game that we still cannot fathom nor believe. But he's a good guy, good LSU guy, and you know what else is he supposed to say? Yeah, we shouldn't be here. Saints won. They should have won. Well, anywho, congratulations, Andrew Whitworth, coming back one more time. All right, let's do our daily history lesson in the world of sport. We go back on this day, February 26th, to the year 1935. The Yankees traded away Babe Ruth, traded to the Boston Braves, where he acted as executive, player, and assistant manager. He would later announce his retirement in June. Kind of a bad ending to a tremendous, tremendous story. The legend of Babe Ruth lives on and on and on. The Bambino, but on this day, back in 1935, traded from the Pinstripes to the Boston Braves. That's how we came up with the curse of the Bambino. Well, that curse has been put away once and forever, because the Boston Red Sox, pretty darn good enough, won their share of World Series. All right, if today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us. to all of you. Hope you have a great day with a lot of cake and a lot of ice cream and some good, good presents. You share it with the likes of former LSU football assistant coach Michael Haywood, Ronald Martin, and pretty good baseball player Michael Papirski. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. And Michael Bolton, happy 65th birthday. He's still singing around the world. How about that? How about that? So there you have it. CD, job well done. Tomorrow we'll recap LSU versus Texas A&M Hoops. We'll see if the Raging Cajuns and the Lions, how that turns out. And we'll preview LSU Southern and anything else that's happening as we get ready for the NFL Combine coming up this weekend. That's always a good time. Very pivotal time for a lot of players. No question. All right. So, again, keep it here. 7:30 pregame show. 8 o'clock tip, LSU versus the Aggies of A&M. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We only have one of these Tuesdays, February 26th, so make it the best one you can. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. Boot up. Here we go.